Oh, Samurai. How have you made the Clapham Falcons kit look so bloody good? Whether I'm running, gymming, or just walking around the park casually, admiring the sights of Clapham, there is no better look, and you know this to be true, than wearing full Clapham Falcons Samurai stash. And guess what? All you have to do is click on the link in the bio. And as this lady sings a little melody, lifting our spirits to the skies and beyond, you can be as happy as she is. All you have to do is click on the link in the bio and get hold of our incredible collaboration with the genius artists and creators who have made the best stash in the world. Thank you, Samurai.
Fred, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, mate. I can hear you. Yeah, mate, not so close to the mic. You're a bit muffled.
Okay, sorry. It's just weird doing this over Zoom.
It's
interesting, isn't it? It makes it seem it's possible. This company is going places. I'm going to look into Zoom. Reckon they're going to do some bits. But I'm here in Marlow in my hotel room. Mate, I'll be honest with you, it's not like me, but I'm a bit nervous. You know, there's not just celebrities here.
Really? Who else is there? I thought
there are like normal people, civilians. Yeah. People who don't really have many followers on Instagram.
Oh, God. You must be terrified.
Well, no, it's just different to what I thought. You know, it's not just a physical challenge, but it's going to be a mental challenge as well, because I'm going to have conversations with people who are from everyday life.
You're doing an incredible job, Archie. We're all massively behind you. 300 miles over 3 days to raise that much money. You're a legend.
Thanks, Clovis. Thanks, mate. I'm just looking and thinking, you know, I'm a businessman. I'm a CEO. I'm a chief chat officer. I'm an influencer. I'm Clapham's biggest influencer, podcaster. And now I've just turned my hand to charity, just like that. And have I produced a coin? Yeah, I have. So yeah, actually, I mean, if we're recording, it probably worth mentioning, I brought my mini disc player to the hotel. So I've got a donate button for this episode, just to make sure, just to hammer home that people can still donate. Hold on, give me 2 seconds.
I can't believe you brought that with you.
Hold on, mate, here we go, try this.
Donate now, the link is in the bio.
I can't believe you brought that with you. That was good, but I can't believe you brought your mini disc the whole way. You surely haven't brought other buttons with you, have you?
Mate, I brought all the buttons.
Really?
I've got obviously the Mario Tejo button.
Another one.
Oh God. We've heard
the
that
one Samurai button, which is also really important.
Samurai! No!
And didn't you say that Beauford and Blake are sponsoring this episode as well?
Yeah, they're back. Yeah.
Mate, you're gonna love this. Okay, just quickly, I should just hammer home that people can still donate.
Donate now, the link is in the bio.
And then here, finally, the Beauford and Blake button.
Beauford and Blake.
It really wouldn't be a podcast now without buttons, would it? It's basically a button-focused podcast, which I love, because I love buttons.
Anyway,
let's get to it, Clovis. Let's get to it.
This is the one. It's coming back for Johnny Wilkinson. He drops for World Cup glory.
Lash. Viens avec moi pour le rugby en France. Prends une bière et on suit dans la danse. Viens-tu de suite si ta seule chance. Bienvenue à la Coupe du Monde de rugby en France.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to episode 152 of the Rubis podcast. And as Archie gets ready for his mammoth challenge to raise money for MND, we are separated for only the second time in the history of this podcast. Archie, do you remember last time?
Yeah, I think it was Jamie Lang, wasn't it?
It was Big Jamie. And everyone loved that one.
But
so
it doesn't feel right, Clovis. I like to be near you, to touch you, but this is certainly interesting. I'm in my hotel room. It's pretty, I'd describe it as pokey.
Right.
I've got a single bed.
Oh, nice.
And I'm sharing with a guy called Paul.
Oh, that is nice.
To be honest with you, I don't really know any Pauls, but anyway. Pulls out at the moment. Interesting guy. You have to room with people. I asked him straight away when he got in the room. I said, so, like, what do you do? And he just does like a normal job. And I was like, have you got Instagram followers? Not many. So, you know, I am really just want to hammer home to people. I'm really doing my bit for charity here. I'm slumming it out. And a single bed is difficult because I like to move around in the night. I'm a mover. I'm a shaker. You know, I toss and turn. I dream about business deals. I dream about, you know, various rugby plays. And that makes me move around. So I just hope I can get a good night's sleep, because I've got a hell of a ride tomorrow morning.
Archie, I'm guessing there's some sort of initiation. Come on, it's Kenny Logan, it's Archie Kurzon, there's Jason Fox around. Surely you've rocked up and said, lads, we need to do an initiation.
Yeah, I got here, Clodis. We had a team meeting, and afterwards I tried to organise another team meeting with some of the A-listers here, and I said, right, bum funnels, I'm here, it's time to do some initiations. Foxy wasn't keen, mate. I don't know why. He went to the room. Mel Dean wasn't keen. Gabby Logan, she wasn't keen. She actually hasn't spoken to me yet. Jamie Bamber's not keen. Jimmy Nesbitt's not keen. Alan McCoy's Koisty, who I thought would be right up for it. I don't know if he's keen or not. I can't really understand a lot of what he's saying to me. I don't know whether he's up for it or he's not up for it. And then Kenny Logan said he's keen when we get to Paris. Disappointingly, Kirsty Gallagher, she ain't keen for a bum funnel. But mate, it's going to be great. I'm actually waiting for Paul to come back. And I'm gonna surprise him with a debagging straight away, and just be like, "Welcome to the charity bike ride, mate." We're apparently rooming the whole way through, but I actually had a 5-minute conversation when I got in the room with him. I just asked him a few key things, like where he went to school, not a school I heard of, where he lived, hadn't heard of the place he lived, and just asked him what his basic salary was, but he didn't want to tell me that. And then I haven't seen him really since we spoke, but it's like 11:30 at night now, so he should be back anytime now. And then I'm bloody debagging him, and I've got the toothbrush, so he's kind of I'm gonna get him. So it should be good. But mate, I want to get a bit of a shut eye because obviously we set off tomorrow. But I am excited, mate. It's great, and I've got to say I'm in peak condition. Obviously played my first rugby match last weekend. I'm in shape, mate. I can't wait to get those lycras on. Honestly, if there is a material that suits me, it's lycras.
Obviously, you're doing a lot for charity. You're, you know, a wonderful, wonderful man for doing so.
Yeah, but Clodagh, just wait. You just mentioned charity. Let me just press the button one more time.
Donate now. The link is in the bio.
Very good.
But, carry on, mate.
You are obviously, you know, like a Jesus-esque figure in this whole debacle. But one thing is, have you not been getting quite a lot of abuse for biking and wearing Lycra? You know, you always used to piss out of cyclists, and I'm guessing the Clapham boys, has there been any abuse?
I've had a few people say, you know, biking equals hockey banter, but maybe they want to tell Jason Fox that to his face, see what he says. I tell you what, he ain't a hockey boy, mate. He's in. Talk about someone in good nick. He's in good nick. But no, mate, everyone's been pretty kind. I've got to say a massive thank you to absolutely everybody who has donated. It's been overwhelming. And from the bottom of my heart, I know the podcast listeners have really dug deep. So, you know, we're a team, mate, and I didn't expect any less. I mean, the people who listen to this podcast are elite. They're a high caliber individual. Do they owe me it? Well, kind of, because, I mean, I have helped them over 152 episodes of absolute C.H.A.T. chat, which has improved, you know, their banter, you know, their chat, which in turn has helped them make a lot more coin. I'll be honest with you, mate, I wasn't that keen about biking. I thought biking were for sort of people who supported Labour. But I tell you what, since I've joined, the biking community have taken me in as one of their own. And, you know, I've loved it.
Well, we must not forget that you are ending this incredible bike ride, this incredible feat, by walking onto the pitch at the Stade de France to start the Scotland-Ireland game. Yeah. Talking about the rugby, our favourite side, not England, it may surprise a few, Italy. I mean, we're just going to have to quickly touch on that because England weren't playing this weekend, but our boys in blue were, and it didn't go to plan, nearly shipping 100 points to the All Blacks.
It's disappointing. I left Seb Negri a message the morning of the game. I'm singing him Nickelback and he loved it. And I really thought they were going to cause an upset, but that these things happen. You know, it has been known in the past that I've had a bad quarter and, you know, you're on a roll and you think it's all going to happen. And then, you know, it does happen out of the blue, but they'll dust themselves down and they'll go again. I truly believe. I love those boys like they're Clapham Falcons and I haven't given up hope on them. I know they're listening to this now and boys, I believe. But I can't wait for the Ruggers. Can't wait for Paris. I mean, Ireland-Scotland's going to be a great game, Clodagh. The Lasharoo, the Birrios are going to taste even sweeter after carving out 300 miles from Marlow to Paris. All in the aid of charity. Hold on, mate.
Donate now. The link is in the bio.
Well, Archie, it's easy for us to forget with all this incredible, incredible charity work you're doing, which we keep on mentioning, but honestly, it is wonderful that there is an interview to be had. And luckily, before you escaped to Marlow, we got to sit down with the highest scoring rugby league player in history. He is called Mr. Martin Chariots of Fire. He's the biggest legend in rugby league history, but also played rugby union for Wasps, incredible record, Roslyn Park Sevens, England Sevens as well. I mean, the man's done it all.
Yeah, Clodis, this is an inspiring interview with an inspiring man who's done it all, not just on the sporting field, but also in a business world now. And since recording the interview, I've actually connected with Martin on LinkedIn, and we've got some pretty exciting plans ahead. You're about to hear from a real life legend. So there's only one thing to say. Onside chat.
Here he is. Welcome.
Just been for a walk, so I've got the heated gilet on.
That's nice. I love a gilet. Can I say, Martin, you're looking in good nick. What do you do?
I get up every morning, have a cold shower and exercise. I've got my Olympic bar in the garden, I go for a walk, a run. So
Daily
routine.
How long are you in the cold shower for? Because I like to do a 20-minute cold shower.
A minute 30 is enough for me.
A minute 30, okay. I do 20 minutes and then I do 50 naked push-ups, 50 naked squats, and 50 naked jumping lunges.
I do all of that, but I tend to do it clothed. Yeah.
I guess that's just something I learned from boarding school. I just prefer to exercise naked. Well, my teacher, Mr. Matthews, preferred me exercising naked.
Did he?
Yeah.
Well, I should say to the listeners, we are delighted to be joined by the top English try scorer in the history of rugby league, Martin Afur. Martin, how does a hard-nosed rugby league player who made a name for himself in the working-class cities of the North end up following a ridiculously posh man who plays Division 5 semi-pro rugby?
Because I am a boarding school boy myself. Went to where I discovered rugby back in the mid-70s when the Welsh team were playing really well, winning back-to-back, I think, Grand Slam. So I was a big fan of Welsh rugby back in the 70s. And yeah, I just went, I'm just an inner city kid from London whose parents were slightly educated. My dad was a barrister, my mum a school teacher. So they sent me to this, I thought they didn't love me. So they sent me to a boarding school that did have a football team. I could not comprehend it. Yeah. And so that's obviously I've got, even though I'm known as a rugby league player, I've got that rugby union background, played in the Middlesex Sevens, played for Roslyn Park, quite a well-to-do club.
Yeah.
I played in the Middlesex Sevens. I was there that day in 1987 when Swing Low was first ever sung at Twickenham. Everyone thinks it's Chris Oatey in 88 when he scored that hat-trick for England, but it was sung.
No, I've got that in my research. I've got that in my research. You're the reason that Swing Low is sung. I mean, what are your thoughts on Swing Low?
Well, you know, our history is our history. We can't, you know, whitewash it, blackwash it, or however you want to paint it. I'm just happy to be part of rugby union and rugby league folklore. Obviously, I've got my statue outside Wembley for the score try I scored in 94. But yeah, I do have a rugby union pedigree in history as well, which not a lot of people know. Obviously, I was one of the first black players to play for the Barbarians as well.
How do I get a statue? I'd like to have one outside on Clapham Common.
Well, you need to be a great of the sport. I mean, he's the highest try scorer in the history of rugby league. You play Div 5 South West London.
I've delivered more banter than anyone else in Clapham for the last 5 years.
Well, we should
look
try
into
get
it. Write it down.
I loved it. I was at a dinner recently and I was just having a conversation and someone just showed me their phone and said, "Have you seen this guy?" So he showed me the CEO of Clapham.
I am. And the CEO of Clapham and the chief chat officer. Yeah.
Do you live in Clapham, Martin?
No, but I did used to DJ in Clapham. So UK.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. What a place.
So I used to DJ in Clapham, go to Clapham quite a lot. Didn't used to go to that big club with the sticky floors.
Infernus.
Martin.
Yeah, it's where Archie lives.
It's not too late. I can take you and Jason Robinson for a night out there. You'd have free drinks all night.
I mean, Martin, you were known as Chariots of Fire, as you were a devastatingly fast winger, scored an incredible 501 tries. Such a great nickname. But were there any other sort of weird nicknames you can remember of any of your sort of other teammates? And same for you, Archie.
Yeah, I have a lot of different nicknames. In Australia, I'm known as Great Balls. my teammates at Wigan used to call me Jibber, just because they used to say that I used to jibble all the hard work and just score tries. So Jibber and Great Balls are the two other ones. But it was actually Colin Welland who wrote the screenplay to Chariots of Fire, who actually also wrote the foreword to my autobiography in 1997, who said he was there that famous day in 87 when people started calling me Charrettes, because I didn't realize that was my nickname until I saw it in the newspaper. And I thought, and I think Ian Botham, who I was at a dinner with recently, is the first person to ever call me that to my face, because as I say, it's something I jumped on board with, but initially I wasn't too enamored with the nickname Charrettes, but now.
What about you, Archie? Any weird names?
There's two guys on my team. One guy's called Rhino, just because he has sex every 5 years. And another guy's called Simba, but that's because his dad died.
Martin, you used to wear a sort of a white sticker on your nose when you played. It was like quite a cool thing to wear. What was the purpose of that? And Archie, also for you, do you wear anything sort of alternative on the pitch to aid your performance?
I think I'm more well-known for sweatbands. I used to wear a red, gold and green and a red, white and blue sweatband every game. But the nose thing was, I think it was around about the sort of the mid-90s when we were getting into, you know, the whole science thing was coming about. You know, people always thought they used to open up your nostrils so you'd get more oxygen into your nose, but I don't know if it really worked. But I think when Wigan played in the Middlesex Sevens, when we won the Middlesex Sevens, I think back in 96, the first ever rugby league team to set foot on the hallowed turf of Twickenham. You know, we've had people like myself, Andy Farrell, Sean Edwards, Jason Robinson, Scott Quinnell, Brian Gatitala, Henry Paul, Conley, probably the greatest sevens team I ever played in. It was a fantastic day, and we beat Leicester, Harlequins and Wasps in the final on the same day. And I think that's the day that when rugby union sort of stood up and thought, we need to get a lot of rugby league coaches.
Yeah, ASAP.
And coach us into the game.
We're talking about those great...
If you know the white strip nose.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of guys I work with in the city who use that.
Really?
Yeah, just to open up their nostrils.
Okay.
Was that for something else?
Yeah, I don't know.
Can we talk about that on this podcast?
Yeah, yeah.
Talking of being a great, you know, obviously you're mentioning there Sean Edwards, you're mentioning Farrell. You play alongside all of them. Also, Sinfield was, you know, knocking about. What makes rugby league players such sort of great defence coaches? I mean, have you ever been tempted to be one?
No, because when I retired, I started in Union, finished out the season in 2002, playing with Wasps, with the likes of Kenny Logan and Lawrence Lalio and Josh Lucy, Shawsey and such like. But when I retired, I wanted to go off and do other things. I wanted to DJ at So UK on Club My Street. Yeah. I wanted to DJ in Ibiza. I wanted to be on reality TV shows. I thought there's more out there in the world I wanted to do. And I thought to myself, do I really want to stay in on a Saturday night because we have a game on Sunday with a coach? So, yeah, I wanted to go and explore and do other things. That's probably why I didn't want to be a coach. But, you know, I think the nature of the game, I've had this conversation. I had the opportunity to interview recently because I do a lot of work for British Airways, to interview Steve Borthwick and Eddie Jones recently. And I spoke to them about it. And, you know, what do they see about rugby league coaches? And they said that obviously in Union, there's a lot of unit coaching. You know, you've got the line out, you've got the scrum, you've got backs coaches. But in rugby league, because of the nature of the sport, that if you drop the ball, you don't get it back for another six tackles. You have to coach a lot of specifics, a lot of individuals. And obviously in rugby league, you know, it's a linear defense. The hardest defense to break down is a line, isn't it? Yeah, that's the hardest defense to break down. Whereas in rugby union, sometimes you've got the scrum, you've got other things. So it is about that whole linear approach. In rugby league, they do coach the individual rather than units. It is about your individual skills. You know, as when you go and watch any game, you know, what are any game of rugby defined by? It's defined by who drops the ball the least, who gives away least penalties, and who doesn't miss tackles. Regardless of all whatever you want to do, you watch any rugby game, and I guarantee you, it will be defined by a missed tackle, it'll be defined by a drop pass, or it'll be defined by somebody giving a penalty away. And that's individual coach skills. And I think that's why it's the mindset of the rugby league. And I think that's why a lot of rugby league coaches are involved in the sport of union. You know, people always say, oh, Martin, you only scored a load of tries because you were fast. I said, there's a lot of fast people who played rugby, you know. There's a lot of fast people who played rugby league since 1895. But just think, how many people have played rugby league in England since 1895? I'll tell you, a lot, thousands. But none have scored more tries than me. No. And I think that is just because I understood the mind maybe more than them.
Martin, how much would it cost me to give you my daughter for a couple of months to coach her to become a women's England great?
It's not about me. It's more about them. You know, you have to go and seek things out. Yes, someone could be an expert, but it's all about that emotional connection. Someone can have all the knowledge. Everyone knows what to do to be healthy, don't they? I would say. But not, then why are 80% of the population unhealthy? So it's more about, it's not about the teacher. They always say that the teacher appears when you're ready. It's all about the individual. And, you know, the information is out there. It's about, does anyone want to go and seek it? All these, you know, fables are so true. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink, you know?
Yeah. She's one, so I don't know whether she's ready. But yeah, maybe when she's seven, I'll give her to you for a couple of months and you can take 10% of potential earnings in the future.
Well, I think it's more about you. I think it's a bit more about you, actually. Are you the right parent? Do you set the example?
Well, yeah, I do. I mean, she sees me on the phone in the kitchen, you know, sometimes doing deals. She sees me doing my naked press-ups and lunges in the morning. I mean, she sees the dedication that I put into, you know, I'm one of the greatest semi-professional rugbys to ever play. You know, you don't become CEO of Clapham for nothing, but, you know, having conversations with a great like yourself, you know, imagine that, you know, she lives at home with me, but she's coached by Martin O'Fire. And then together, you know, we build her up to become like one of the greatest women fly halves of all time. I can see it happening. They'll probably write a film about it.
Well, we'll start now. I'd say start now. Teach her to catch with her hands and not against her chest.
Write that down because I'm going to get on the program straight away. She's one. She can't walk yet, but she will bloody catch by the end of this week.
Well, you should be catch before you can walk. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a soft toy. Start throwing a soft, cuddly toy in the in the pram.
Yeah,
so, Martin,
or a pineapple.
Yeah, maybe a pineapple, a bit prickly.
Commercial break.
It's Beaufort and Blake.
I love Beaufort and Blake. And so do the chickens.
Just one Beaufort and Blake.
I've got a very big ego, so I need some new clothes so I can make sure that the cheekies can get real close. They wanna get down on their knees. Baby begging please, you're the hottest man I've seen. That's the smartest fucking pair of chinos there have ever been. They make you look so thin. I want you to come back in, it's the Beaufort way. Be a sexy bae. Everybody wants to wear Beaufort and Blake. And guess what? Now you can all wear Beaufort and Blake, cause we are giving you 50% off the new incredible autumn winter collection, modeled by none other than Mr. Archie fucking Curzon. So all you have to do is click the link in the bio and put in the code RIGBIZ15, RIGBIZ15, and you will get 15% off all their incredible new collection. You're welcome. Martin, you played alongside Sean Edwards, as you said earlier, apparently the hardest bastard in the world and just, you know, completely crazy. What are your sort of most hilarious memories of him being weird on or off the pitch?
Great Britain Lions tour of 1988, we were roomies. And we used to have a battle to get back to the room because during, you know, we'd train in the morning and then we'd have a bit of downtime and we'd train in the afternoon. And I'd always want to watch TV and he'd always want to have a sleep. So I remember after one training session, I thought, I'm going to beat him back to the room. So I ran all the way back to the room, got in there, laid on the bed, pressed the remote control. The TV wouldn't come on. It turns out that he'd pulled the plug out of the cable out of the plug. So I couldn't watch the TV. I thought, this guy is just, I just thought he was just warped. He used to have arguments with himself in the mirror. He was so focused and obsessed. And I just thought he was crazy. And I later learned that unless people think that you are crazy and obsessed, you're not in the right space. You know, the world has to think you're crazy for you to be, you know, when they say people are ahead of their time, but he definitely was. And I owe him everything because then I used to sleep. I used to do what he did because I couldn't watch the TV. So I used to sleep and rest between training sessions because he really gave it 100%. And I realized if you're giving it 100% in your downtime, you need to rest. You shouldn't be watching TV or focused on something else. And fast forward to 1993 when I was, you know, I had 4 years playing at Widnes. Then Wigan bought me for a record sum of £440,000 in 1992. I had a fantastic 92 season, scoring 10 tries in one game. I scored 5 tries in the semi-final of the Challenge Cup. Got the man of the match in at Wembley and, you know, done everything in that first season. And then in 1993, I dislocated my shoulder. I was having a bit of a tough time. Sean could see this. And he gave me a bit of a pep talk. I said, look, Martin, if it's not broken, you don't fix it. Go back to what you do. Get back to the sprint track. Because I was trying to put on weight because of my dislocated shoulder and I was worried about tackling and Wigan were thinking about getting rid of me. They just signed Vaiga Tuigomala. Jason Robertson was coming on the scene. Imagine that. You've got Jason Robertson, you know, one of the greatest wingers to arguably play both codes. You've got Viga Tuigomala, the precursor to Jonah Lomu. And then people were saying, you know, Martin, get rid of him. But Sean put me on the right track. I got back to my best. You know, Jason didn't get picked for the 94 Wigan team. People don't realise that. Even though in 95, he won the Lance Todd, which was the man of the match at Wembley. In 94, he didn't play. And it's only because Sean Edwards got me on track. I got back into my stride. I remember waking up the morning of the Challenge Cup final. Imagine that. This was one of the biggest games, you know, if not the biggest game of the year. And I woke up to a story in the Daily Mirror written by another great of the game, a guy called Alex Murphy, who played at St. Helens, saying that I was finished, I was the best of a bad bunch, and I wasn't that great. And that's what I took into that game. And, you know, obviously I scored the try, which I'm famous for, which, you know, was probably the most watched rugby league bit of footage in this country of me scoring a length of the field try, going outside a guy called Alan Tate, who also went on to be a rugby union Lion, scoring a famous try for the Lions in the 97 British Lions tour to South Africa. And I went round him, and I always say to Tate, I made him famous that day. And obviously there's a statue of me in my pose that I did when I went to my knees with my head in my hands. And I'm on that statue. And what people don't know is that Alex Murphy, the guy who wrote a full page story about me, and, you know, anyone who wants to go to my Instagram feed, you'll see it's the first picture of that story that Alex Murphy wrote. And as I say, he's with me on that statue for eternity. And that's why I always say, you have to believe in yourself. Don't let other people define you. You define yourself. If I had crumbled on that day, if I had read that story and didn't use it as motivation, you know, like people, they always tell a story about a teacher at school who inspired them, like Ian Wright would say, or Robbie Williams says, the teacher who said he wouldn't come to anything. Opposite stories, but it's just about how you define that story, how you use it. And that's why I would say I'm always about the mind. And I say if Sean Edwards didn't give me that pep talk, you know, I wouldn't have gone into get my form back. And if Alex Murphy didn't say I was rubbish and I was finished and write that story, imagine that. It's not often a rugby players get a whole, even today, a whole page in a red top newspaper and the story is about you and it's a negative story. And I said, no, even today, if you're a rugby player and that happens to you, it's a big thing. So this is 2023. So imagine what it must have been like in 1994. But I used it as fuel. And, it's a story that's helped define me to this day. And Haskell always gives me grief about it. And my son always gives me grief about it. But they say, mate, and even other World Cup winners, a good mate of mine, Mark Regan, gives me stick about it. I go, Mark, you only scored one try. You're living off it to this day. I said, no, I scored 501 try. And that's the one try that sticks above the water like the iceberg that sunk the Titanic. What a great try. What a great try that was. You know, it's very polite. Then I'm thrust into 20,000 people at Halifax. I'm playing for Widnes. Yeah. And mate, it's intense. They really hate me. I'm being racially abused by 20,000 people, right? They literally want to jump over the barriers and want to assault me. You don't have to experience those things nowadays, but I had to experience that. The vitriol, the spitting, the throwing of bananas, all that. But I thought to myself, you know what? I don't know who you are, but you know who I am. You're giving me immense power. If I score a length of the field try today, I'm going to really piss you off. So it's like anything in life. You're going to have things that work for you, things work against you, but you have to, you know, use your brain and just turn it into, make hay while the sun shines, make it into a positive story. I used to love it. Even now I get people on social media send me messages say apologizing for racially abusing me back in the 80s because they have seen the light and they've see me on social media now, and then they harken back to that time and go, maybe I shouldn't have done that. But I'm thinking, no, don't apologize. You made me. You know what it was like going to Batley on a Friday night, trying to get yourself up, playing on an uphill pitch, and it's horrible. I'm saying your chance or whatever, you inspired me, so I should be thanking you. So I say, if you're successful in life, I used to think I was successful in spite of things, but that's not the case. You're successful because of good or bad. Because sometimes you might have so much good, you're complacent. Imagine that. You're born into money. Life is easy. You go to great schools. You don't want for anything. Mate, why are you going to strive? Why would you? You think, I'm going to inherit inherit 10 million. It's like, what's the motivation? Whereas I was a person, I thought I was good enough. I didn't get picked for England schools at 18. You know, fingers crossed, you know, my son might get picked for England schools next year. He had a great conversation with the current England under-18s coach, Bill Parkin, after scoring two tries at the weekend. But sometimes, you know, if you things are too good for you early, then you don't strive. But I didn't get picked. I had things going against me. Imagine that, telling someone who is good enough that they're not good enough.
Yeah,
that's a recipe for greatness. So it's however you want to create a story in your mind to make you prosper.
Then Martin, my question is off the back of that. Sorry, I know we're going off on a tangent a little bit, but I'm just interested because now your son, obviously at Wellington, a great school, he probably has had an easier ride than maybe you have. How do you then, because it's so inspiring when you talk about, you know, that, you know, you were racially abused, that drove you, you know, everyone doubted you. Now your son's a slightly different upbringing, obviously. You know, you've done well. Yeah. You know, you've got a lot of coin. You've got a great chassis. Yeah. You've got the chat. You've got the three C's. Your son's going to a great school. How do you then maintain that he, you know, how do you keep him going? How do you keep the drive? How do you educate someone like that?
You just engineer adversity. It's that simple. Yeah. I have to, because there's no adversity, I have to engineer adversity in his life. He doesn't get any money from me. The only way he'll get money from me is if he has a minute cold shower and does well in a game. Otherwise, there's nothing for him.
Yeah.
The only way, I'm telling him, he won't be inheriting anything from me. I'll invest in his education. Yeah. I'll get, you know, I'll make him read books. I'll, you know, reward him for anything he does, but he's not getting anything from me. He's going to be a self-made man. Yeah. So, you know, the only way that he's going to get anything in life is off his own back. Yeah, I'll help him. I'll give him. So he's going to be in a different situation with me, but he's not a trust fund kid. He's gonna. You have to engineer adversity into people's life. Eddie Jones talked about it recently and got a lot of flack, you know, for talking about the public school system, the academy system, not, you know, and that we need to open it up. We need to open up to rugby to people from other backgrounds because he wants his team to be from different backgrounds. Because as we know now, it's very hard to make it as a rugby player unless you go to one of the top schools through your parents being able to pay for you, or, you know, you get a scholarship, you know, if you're, you know, so he wants, that's why they have the ACE program now. They're trying to do, you know, add a bit of diversity into the sport of rugby union because it's going to help us, you know, when we see the likes of South Africa, see the likes of New Zealand, their route to the top is slightly different to that of the.
Martin, obviously you played Union Sevens and League. Rugby Union, especially in the old days, 80s, 90s, had some pretty dirty initiations. Rugby League is a hard man's sport, you know, even harder than Union, debatably. Were there any weird initiations? I mean, you played for several clubs and you played overseas as well.
Yeah, obviously a lot of drinking. I didn't drink until I was about 28. I think I did. I didn't drink alcohol because I was always of the mindset, Linford Christie doesn't drink alcohol. And when I was in the off season, I would always go and sprint with sprinters. I always compete with sprinters. I remember having a conversation with the great Phil Bennett a few years back, and he said he did the same thing. And I always thought, that's why they say great minds think alike. I've never met the guy before, only admired him from afar. We have a conversation and we've got similarities. You know, he used to have he used to say that Gareth Edwards always gets the plaudits for that great try.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the bar against the All Blacks in, and ironically that got voted the best try of all time, I think, and in the Daily Telegraph a few years back, and I think my try at Wembley came in second. I thought coming in second to that was great.
That's pretty good.
It's all part of the story.
And now you're on a globally award-winning podcast that's had all the greats. I mean, it is incredible because we've had some of that. We've not just had rugby's like greatest like yourself, but we've also had Darren Goff, cricket great.
Goffey's got some great stories about Goffey as well.
I've been to Goffey's house off the back of it and gone and got pissed with him, and with his wife.
I love Goffey.
Yeah, yeah. Extraordinary.
I was serious first rugby player ever to appear on Strictly Come Dancing. Series 1, 2004. Even though Goffey did win it
in
series 2 or 3, I was the first one. I came fourth. I've been on shows like Strictly Come Dancing, Splash, famous rugby players Come Dine With Me from 2000. The most watched Come Dine With Me of all time.
One of my favourites.
Victor Abogo. Gareth Gilcott. And Kieran Brackett. It was done so many amazing things, but it's all from keeping the jerk, telling that story and thinking what's the future. Now I'm involved in sustainability and electric vehicle charging and trying to save the planet.
Yeah, curbside. We're big fans of it, actually.
Connected curb. You know what I mean? And that's, you know, when I started with them, I remember sitting there in the office with my email and Wi-Fi password thinking, what am I going to do here? What am I going to do? And I had to figure it out. And it's only one day when I was driving in my car, which is an EV, by the way, I got in it for the love. I was in it for the love, always being stuff for the love. Life's about opportunity, curiosity, which leads to emotional connection. Right? You have an opportunity. My mum sent me to a boarding school, opportunity. Curiosity, what is this strange game with an odd ball, which then led to a love affair with rugby. And then that's when you're on the journey of doing it. Same with electric vehicles. Andy Gomersall, another great rugby player, yeah, gave me a lift in an EV at the Cheltenham Festival in 2016. My wife had an accident in her car, so I bought one for her. And then that led to an emotional connection. So that's why I'm in it. I could make money from it because I'm in a business. I'm in it for the right reasons. And now I'm trying to grow it into, you know, one of the biggest EV companies in the world.
So that's funny. It's like me, we're built on. You know, I've got a love affair built on great protein supplement. It helps my chassis stay in good nick, and that's why I go around.
Yeah, but Martin's a millionaire.
Yeah, I will be a millionaire. You know,
when the market upturns,
I'm cup half full. Okay.
94, your 90-meter challenge cup final try of all your 500 tries must be your greatest. I mean, obviously, you've got the statue, and that must be incredible just to be able to rock up to Wembley every single week and just stare at yourself.
Yeah, because I always say to people, you know, it's about connections. And getting back to my last point about what I do at Connected Curb, it's about my network. It's about connecting with people, yeah, as human beings first. You know, back in the day, girls used to come up to me in nightclubs and go, I used to fancy you. Then they come up to me and go, oh, my mum used to fancy you. And now they come up and go, my granny used to fancy you. Yeah. It's all about human connection.
Quite similar with you, actually.
That's what I do with Connected Curb. Is people come up to me and go, oh, are you Martin Afire? And I go, yeah. And I go, what are you doing now? I go, oh, I'm a brand ambassador for electric vehicle charger infrastructure company, blah, blah, blah. This is what we do. They go, oh, I know somebody. Let's connect. And that's it. You know, it's being a nice person, basically.
That's how the city operates.
Yeah.
That's how the city, you know, I walk into the net. Someone says, you, Archie Cousin, one of the greatest semi-professional rugby players of your generation. I say, yeah. And then next thing I know, a girl comes up to me and says, my friend really fancies you. And so I firstly do business with the businessman, and then, yeah, you know, I go and have a snog with a chica.
Any older ladies, grannies coming up to you?
Look, I don't want to go into too much detail, but yeah, there's obviously older ladies. I spread over, I'm like Martin, I do generation, you know. There are girls in their 30s all the way up to their 70s I get messages from.
Wow, great. That's incredible.
I don't mind. I love an older woman.
Well, Martin, talking about...
My mum's an older woman.
Martin, talking about your incredible career, I mean, obviously, rugby league, we don't really even have to mention it further because you were the greatest ever player to touch the earth, especially in this country. Just unbelievable. But you finished your career in 2001 playing for London Wasps under, yeah, Sean Edwards back into Union. How did that come about? And, you know, you were playing alongside some huge characters in that team, so that must have been great fun.
Yeah. Just again, I had a season. I think in 2001, I was the oldest winger in Super League playing for Salford. I thought my career was over. I played in a testimonial game for a guy called Harvey Thornycroft. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of him, but he played for Northampton back in the day, and he had a testimonial. So I played in that testimonial game, did pretty well. And Wasps were going through injury worries. My good friend Sean Edwards was just started at Wasps. So the phone just rang, and he said Wasps was literally down the road. I was living in Chiswick at the time. And the Wasps training ground, their old training ground in Twyford, not sure if you know it, mm-hmm, when they're playing at QPR's ground. He just said to me, Martin, come down. Came down, you know, still had it. Played in a trial game for them against Bath, did really well. And then they just signed me to the end of the season. I thought I was going to get another season because it was the time when Nigel Melville was the coach, but Warren Gatlin was just about to take over. And I would have been 38, and I thought that I was going to get another season. And even to this day, I joke when I see Sean, I said, Sean, whatever happened, mate? I thought you were going to sign me for another year. But apparently one of the directors said I was too old.
But so you scored 5 tries in 8 matches.
Mate, I'll tell you, I'm still killing it. Yeah. I'll tell you, one of my greatest moments in rugby, because I have quite a few, you know, obviously scoring at Wembley, the 10 tries,
yeah, yeah,
Old Trafford in the World Club Challenge,
scoring, oh, yeah,
against Canberra Raiders, scoring in Australia. One of my greatest moments was, I think it was a live Sky game, and I was on the bench. I think Wasps were losing. Johnny Wilkinson was on the other, playing for the other team. And I think 5 minutes ago, we're losing. Stuart Barnes was going, oh, I don't think Wasps are going to win this game. And then I'm like limbering up on the touchline. I come on the pitch. And I think this is on my Instagram feed as well, the video, because I found it not too long ago. And Stuart Barnes go, oh, Martin Fire, you know, great rugby league player, but I think he's a bit past it now, basically. And I go, score in the corner off a pass from Josh Lucy. Kenny Logan kicks it from the touchline. Wasp win. How'd you like me now? And that is how I bowed out for rugby.
Oh, yeah.
Out on a high, really. Basically, this is where I retired. I was literally waiting for the phone to ring. The season started, the phone hadn't rung, and I thought, I suppose I'm retired.
Martin, obviously you made a fuckload of money throughout your career. You're a brilliant businessman, a brilliant sportsman. What's the most outlandish purchase you ever made?
The most outlandish purchase I've ever made was, I think, after I signed my Nike deal at Wigan. I did a big, massive Nike campaign back in the mid-90s. I was on billboards everywhere. It was like the hands can't catch what the eyes can't see. And so I went and bought the Rockstar Mansion. I had a swimming pool, a jacuzzi, a sauna. And everyone used to come, and like the likes of Andy Farrell, Sean Edwards, and all the boys used to come, just basically abuse my house. And Nike room as well, which had, was basically a spare bedroom, which had Nike boxes in it. And they used to literally come, swim in my pool, use the jacuzzi and the sauna, and basically get a change of clothes and leave in a full Nike outfit, leave wet towels and their spare clothes. I think, you come to my house, leave your clothes and leave and go in a full Nike outfit. And then after I had it for a year and I saw how much my gas bill was, I thought,
it's time to get rid of it.
I've got a similar thing in my house. I've got a samurai room because we're sponsored by Samurai. So guys just come round. I get them naked and then put the samurai stash and send them on their way.
But you should get Martin around.
Yeah, we'll get Martin around for a samurai sesh.
Just finishing on Andy Farrell, because obviously both him and Sean are doing incredible things in rugby union. What are you making this England team? You were a man who made your name making 501 tries, just being an attacking, incredibly explosive player. Are you bored by this England rugby team?
No, I'm excited now. Wait. What, Marcus Smith at fullback, Jason Robinson 2.0. We've got Arundel on the wing. Got some, we've got some excitement back. It's a great problem to have with, two world class tens in Ford, whose dad I played with, and in Owen Farrell, whose dad I also played with. That's when you know you're getting older. You played with everyone's fathers who are playing. But
Mike Ford seems a bit of a character, because I have a few mates that was coach for them at Bath. He's good on a night out.
Yeah, he was good on a tour. I don't think him and Sean Edwards actually did see eye to eye that much, but that's a whole different story. But George is a great player. I used to see these players when they were young. I remember Owen coming to training, and he always had it. One thing that stuck with me was he always had his ball with him. That's why when I seen that, my kid now, I'm saying to himself, if you don't live with that ball, then you aren't serious.
Let's get her a ball. Let's get your daughter
I'm going to get my daughter a rugby ball today and just stick her in her hand.
Does he have jab or does he have no jab? Does he have jab or does he have no jab? Does he have jab or does he have no jab? Gonna ask those questions now.
So let's start with Andy Farrell.
Andy Farrell, definitely no jab.
Sean Edwards.
Sean Edwards, yes, lots of it. Too much of it.
Jonathan Davies.
Jiffy, yes. But I always say to Jiffy, he always sounds like he's singing, man. Every time he's speaking, because the Welsh have such great voices, aren't they?
Yeah.
That he always sounds like he's singing.
Loza. Delaney.
Mate, a lot of time for LOL, mate. Mate, that guy's got chat for days, mate. Once he kept me awake, I think I just started a connected curb, and we were at Victor Bogu's Nordoff Robbins party, and I had a meeting at 10 a.m. He kept me up till 6 o'clock in the morning.
Jesus. What was he doing?
Some of the England women's rugby team. And mate, I was half an hour late for my meeting.
Jeez. Oh my God. Amazing. He could stay awake that long. Joe Worsley.
Wurzel, chat for days, mate. Love Wurzel, mate. He's a bit of a party as well, Wurzel.
Yeah.
He's
Simon Shaw. Shawsey.
Shawsey. Sean.
We did a live podcast with him.
He thinks he's got chat. I'm telling him that. He thinks he's got chat.
We did a live podcast with him. I'd say no chat.
Yeah, a lot of people were asleep at the end.
He thinks he's got chat now. Don't tell him that.
Kenny Logan?
Logan's, oh, mate, he's just tall and handsome, isn't he, mate? That's the only way he got
I'm on doing a charity bike ride with him next week.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. He seems like he's got chat.
He's just a, he's just a tall, handsome guy, isn't he? He's, you know.
Josh Lucy?
Josh is a bit, he's too serious. Josh has got no chat.
He is very serious. Warren Gatland?
He doesn't say anything. He's never said anything to me.
No chat.
And finally, Kevin Sinfield.
He's got some chat. I haven't really had a night out with Sir Kev. He's got a name like anyone whose nickname is Sir Kev.
Yeah, you got to be careful.
There's not many Sir Kevins out there.
You've got your MBE, mate. You will be a Sir because you're doing incredible work both on the chat front, both on the sports front, and of course the business front. Martin Furr, Chariot, it's been an honour.
Martin, thank you so much for your time. We both really appreciate it.
Let's connect on LinkedIn.
Yeah. I'll ping you a message. Cheers, Martin. Cheers.
Bye. What an absolute hero. I mean, the guy's done it all. Businessman.
Good guy. That was Joe Rogan-esque, that interview. It's pretty loosey-goosey, off the cuff. I mean, there was no game plan. We just went in there, played heads up podcasting. Bonjour, chassis and chassis. It's Archie Curzon here, a.k.a. the Chief Chat Officer, a.k.a. the CEO of Clapham. Anyway, I just wanted to reach out and connect with all of you and just remind you that you can still buy Morlash, a premium lager that tastes just like a Rolex at www.morlashbrewery.com. Use the code RIGBIS15 to get 15% off. You are very welcome.
Well, Archie, just before we finish off, and it's been a slightly different episode because obviously we're remote, but next week we'll be back in person. We've got a real surprise in store. But just before we finish off, Archie, you've been begging me all week, probably because you're quite lonely in Marlow, to bring back your old favourite section, What to Watch. And I know you've got a top three for us. So without further ado, take it away.
Coming at three is Di Stewart. Di is the ultimate cheeker. She's been frontline at the Ryder Cup. Not only has she got phenomenal chat, but she's in seriously good nick. Big up to Di breaking into the top three. At two, it's a classic. She can't be moved. It's Annabelle Jones, Hugh Jones's wife. What a lady. She's been at the World Cup supporting Hugh, and some of the content she's producing is absolutely A-grade. Coming in at one is friend of the podcast, David Birtwistle. Hold on to your horses, because David is running. And this week, he's been trying to get 7 minutes down his half marathon time. It is a roller coaster emotion watching him train, eat, and train. It's not only insightful, his content, but bloody interesting. There you go. Those are my What's Hot on Instagram this week.
So, Archie, I don't know why I'm being so nice to you today. Maybe it's because we're not together. I don't have to put up with you in my face. But you are really doing an incredible thing. So for the last time, we do ask all those listening to please click on the link in the bio and give what they can to this incredible, incredible effort. And also, most importantly, try and find a way that we can solve M&D once and for all.
Yeah, probably worth me doing my button again. Hold on.
Donate now. The link is in the bio.
We shouldn't
forget our two sponsors.
Samurai!
So, Archie, I'm guessing you're going to be wearing your Beaufort and Blake clobber proudly, their new autumn collection. You always look wonderful in it, but exceptional this time around, I must say.
Yeah, no, I've got my Beaufort and Blake stuff ready for Paris Saturday night. But for the time being, Cloders, I'm in full sports mode. You know, when I'm not wearing my Lycras, I'm wearing my Samurai stash.
And we should say that you can still get hold of little bits of Samurai stash. I think it's mostly sold out, but there is another drop coming. So please click through the link and join the Clapham Falcons. Join the team officially by getting your hands on this incredible merch. Yeah?
Fred, I'm going to have to go because Paul, I think he's coming back. And I'm going to get him. All right, mate. Listen, I'll let you know. I'm going to try and get him. He's coming. Right, come here, you. Come here.
Your shoes, I understand a man confused. That must have been, but I don't care. I feel the way your shoulders bend. Not in the empathy. style.